Tentered Theology. We've changed the title. Well, next Sunday I'll be speaking on leaving your comfort zones. That's also Bring a Friend Sunday. Our, I guess we could say, civilization, or our participation in the community of nations, I'm not quite sure how to say that. It seems to me we are entering a new... phase in our culture, our expanded culture beyond the boundaries of our nation, not phases that have been with us before, but as and I don't really know how to integrate this into my psyche and into my own spirituality and try to understand it, but apparently in 33 nations people are rioting because there's not enough food to eat. Don't quite know what to do about that on an individual level, or make suggestions for the church level. I just know that it's in my psyche that there are human beings that 4 years ago had enough food, today do not, and they are rioting in the streets. And where most of us, I would think, aware of the, some would even call it shrinking empire effects of what's happening with the oil in our world and turning to alternative fuels, which now the land that used to be used for food is now being used for alternative fuels. And what do we do about that? Or can we do anything about that? And I am one to with my own sense of spirituality, I try to integrate the things that locally, within our community, and also nationally and internationally, and there are certainly sometimes I'd like to turn those channels and receptors off when I hear so much I don't know what to do and how to deal with it, and nurture my own psychic numbing so I don't have to deal with it or address it in any way, shape, or form. But at the same time, I belong to a religious community that, as my sense of calling as a Unitarian Universalist, demands that we pay attention to things of injustice and things of war. So there we are as I begin my sermon today in our historical context. That's where I find myself. Last week I spoke at a church, UU Church, in Orange City, and they asked me to speak on, this is Earth Day coming up, which is kind of a curious thing. We take a day out for the Earth. I think it'll become more curious as I go on. Since we are the Earth, maybe we ought to take more than one day for the Earth. But they asked me to preach on Earth-centered theology. And that phrase just really caught me. I said, sure, I can do that and just pass on. But then when I sat down to really kind of meditate and try to get a sense on how I would address the thought, concept, reality, whatever, of Earth-centered theology, I began to think, well, what does that mean, Earth-centered theology? What exactly does that mean? And I thought, well, I could take the tack to talk about the welcoming of the faith tradition of paganism and the earth-centered people and move in that direction and talk about the cycles of the earth. And I could certainly do that, and I think that would be a worthwhile effort. I could certainly talk about what we have been talking about for the last 4 months or so, the move from a way of life that was marked by transformation and cooperation, and how that engaged a way of life of patriarchy and engagement. And I think I could weave that into earth-centered and honoring the earth and the theology that way. I could certainly talk about the Unitarian Universalist Transcendentalist movement. Henry David Thoreau and Emerson, I could certainly talk about that. and stroke our own egos a little bit and make us feel good that, that we're part of that heritage and that we move that on and we address that and we speak to that, and that's part of our value system. I thought, well, that would be great too, you know, we'd feel good, and we certainly need to feel good, and we ought to feel good about that. That we've integrated that so much into who we are, into our identities as Unitarian Universalists, that we've made it one of our seven principles. That we are part of the inherent web of existence. And then I thought, nah, I'm not going to do any of that. I want to do something different. Whenever I do something different, that means I don't know exactly what it is I want to do, but I want to really try to get to Earth-centered theology. What does that mean? And then I got to thinking about the term theology. In essence, I guess it means the study of God. But then you really can't study God. You can study what others have written about their understanding of God. I can study the theologians through time. I can certainly study that. I can study, say, let's say if I have, as I interpret it, I've got an experience with God. I've had an experience with God, but during that experience, I'm not reflecting and making meaning. I'm having the experience. And in a sense, we lose that critical thinking process when we have an experience and we're in it and we're one with the experience. But then after the experience, I might reflect upon the experience, make meaning of the experience. I might write poetry. I might write something. I might try to communicate that experience. But as soon as I do that, I'm at least one step removed from my experience of God. But then again, I'm not talking about my study of God. I'm talking about my experience that I interpret is of God. I really can't study God. I can only study the human experience that refers to their experience with God, or that refers to, I've written, when I was in graduate school, I wrote some papers on the theologian Paul Tillich and his thoughts. I even tried to put together, can union and company dialogue have the theological experience of theonomy and autonomy and freedom? You know, trying to understand it, and I can attack theology that way. I'm trying to put things together and bringing theological concepts to bear upon our experience culturally and also individually. So how do I do Earth-centered theology? So I said, well, if we are part of the web of existence, what does that mean? How are we similar to the flower? How are we similar to nature? We've spent, I'm going to say as human beings, at least 6,000 years, and we talked about the divine mind the last time I was here. Part of the understanding of the divine mind is a separation, in a way, from nature, from humans. It's a distancing. That there's a purity in the mind and in the imagination. It's not really connected. It's other than. So at least for that many years, we've been valuing being other than nature. It has become a value to be other than nature. How can it be a value to be other than who you are? But nonetheless, woven into our culture and into our civilization is that value. There's a phrase that I've bumped into recently, and it's called emergent nature. Emerging nature. And I tried to wrestle with that. It's a philosophical, I found it in a book of philosophy, and I'm trying to understand that, and I think it'll help us see how we're similar and help us from the reading, the reflective reading today, to maybe understand that a bit better. Like, when you plant, like we planted plants out in the backyard, we've near my house, right on the outside of my house, we have a pump for a well and that kind of thing. And I put a lattice up there. And my vision was to plant roses. And what I'd be looking at was a wall of roses and not the pump and that kind of mechanical material, which that dream hasn't really come true yet. It's not quite a wall of roses. But we're working on it. However, that's the point I want to get to, is that
when you bring ingredients together of this earth, and when it's just right, something will happen, and that rose will grow, and it's going to fill out its space. That rose is coming. And when it comes, it's not there, but it's going to fill out its destiny. It's going to fill out. It's going to happen. And that's what happens with the earth. When things come together and the ingredients are right, it just simply fills itself out. Well, our imagination does that. It's a word that is called, again, in that same philosophy book, it's called doubling. And in the doubling, what happens when I, after the rose has filled out, and I see the rose, in my imagination, the image of the rose just happens. Just as that rose grew, my imagination grows the rose in my mind. It just happens. I am part of nature that way, that my internal world will automatically create what I experience. I doubled it. The problem with us humans is once I have that image, I have the quality of mind, the quality of imagination, I can make it mean other than what it is. I can change it. In a sense, even though the earth has its say within my imagination by reproducing that image, I can change what the earth says and make a different meaning out of it so that as the earth speaks, I no longer hear it. And for example, what I mean by that, in the 1700s, human beings began to find artifacts, stone axes. They even found elephant, mammoth skulls that were clearly killed by human activity. They found these things. I mean, in a way, the earth was speaking. The earth was telling its story. However, I'm going to say mankind, and mankind deliberately at this point, rather than personkind or humankind. However, the scientists that were discovering these had to fit their discovery into a 6,000-year plan divided up between creation, pre-flood, and post-flood. So whatever they found, whatever the earth was speaking, they had to take that information and fit it into a scheme that human beings created. Even though the earth was having its say, we weren't available to hear what the earth was saying. So, as I began wrestling with this phrase, the earth-centered theology, I came to the conclusion that the earth is the text. The earth is the text. Not what we write about the earth, not what we study about the earth, but the earth itself is the text. And somehow we need to gain an understanding that when the earth moves and the earth speaks and what we discover in the earth, that there's an element of truth to it. And then finally, I realized, well, if I'm part of the web, I'm also text. I also have a say. I'm also part of the web of existence. I'm not separate from it. An example, and a sad example of that is back to not having enough food in the world. In India, I just have to say how the article put that together. In India, they've made it against the law to export rice, except for the high quality rice that's kind of used for decoration, but not really food substance. And they made it against the law to do that because the elites were afraid the people would revolt. Not out of compassion, not out of care, but out of fear. I'm not saying we should take a lesson to that. We would want to change our government, create laws that favor the people, that we need to make our government fear us. I don't think that's a model, or maybe it is a model we could use. But back to the earth, this text, and human beings being part of the earth, and listening to the earth speak. Since 1991 in India, because of the way farming works in India, and to say it, crushing debts have led to an epidemic of farmer suicides that is estimated to have resulted in 150,000 deaths since 1991. Farmers committing suicide because of debt and the problems there. Now, we look at that as an economic problem. Or we don't look at that at all. What I'm saying is that if we look at ourselves as part of the text of the earth, when 150,000 of us, we need to pay attention to the meaning of that. Because the sacred text, the earth, is speaking. And that has meaning. And apparently, that has had no meaning until those who could have done something about it were fearful. We've known since 1865, one of the founders of the environmentalist movement, George Perkins Marsh, I don't know if you're familiar with that name, but he wrote that after being an ambassador to the Kingdom of Italy, he looked at what was went on around the Mediterranean, and he began to coin the term deforestation. And he began to put together that human activity with nature can produce major negative outcomes. So we've known since 1865 about deforestation, and we've known that as human beings engage with nature, we can have these outcomes. So here's the earth again speaking. If you behave in this particular way, this is going to be the outcome. And he said we're beginning to do this in the United States of America. Did we hear the earth speak? Did we hear the sacred text? No. We did not hear the sacred text, and we continued the same behavior. Now, from Henry David Thoreau, I don't talk much about sin from the pulpit, but using his work, I think I'm going to get to what is a sin. In wilderness is the preservation of the world, has become one of the rallying cries of the environmentalist movement. And he also said that wilderness is nature itself, and humankind is seen as an aspect of that nature. It's getting to us. And then he says this, I think I cannot preserve my health and spirits unless I spend 4 hours a day at least, and it is commonly more than that, sauntering through the woods, over the hills and fields, absolutely free from all worldly engagements. You may safely say a penny for your thoughts or 1,000 pounds. As I'm walking, sometimes I am reminded that mechanics and shopkeepers stay in their shops not only all the forenoon, but the afternoon as well, sitting cross-legged, so many of them, as if their legs were made to sit upon and not to walk upon. I think they deserve some credit for not all having committed suicide long ago. Is he prophetic? We ask. Yes. And then he says, if I have forgotten to walk, and then it comes into the afternoon when you can see dusk coming through the shadows, he says, I feel as if I have committed some sin and I need to atone for that sin. The sin that he's talking about is not experiencing oneself as part of nature without thought. That's the sin he's talking about. Not taking time out of our everyday lives where we just saunter, where we just walk with nature and become part of nature and are with nature and recognizing that we are part of nature. And what I'm suggesting, that when we do that, we hear the text of the earth. We hear the earth speak. Two theologians, pastoral theological theologian, Charles Gerken
and also a Hebrew sacred text theologian, Walter Brueggemann. I was reading both of their books, and they both say the same things. They both say that in our culture today, what we experience as commonplace is psychic numbness, forgetfulness, a social malaise, that what happens to us today, we don't have a sense of self-agency to engage into the things that we know we ought to engage in. And I'm thinking that the earth is speaking, and while the earth speaks, I went to a car show and ball game yesterday, and the earth speaks, and I turn the television on, and the earth speaks, and I play this game, and the earth speaks, and I do this, and the earth speaks, and I do this, and the earth speaks. I turned on Al Gore's got a new presentation, and he asks a question. He says, science is speaking about the earth. And he says, as he's listening to what the earth is saying, and science reports to what the earth is saying, he's saying, where's the sense of urgency to do something about it? Where's the sense of urgency to do something about it? I know this as a person who does counseling. There are three ways in which I will break confidentiality. There's three ways that our culture has said, this is enough an emergency, you are going to break the sacred code if one of these three things happens. They are, if there's child abuse, if you think somebody is going to harm somebody else, or if you think somebody's going to commit suicide. And you know, in the counseling process, confidentiality is a sacred principle. I mean, if you break sacred confidentiality, the system really breaks down in the psychotherapeutic process. It does not work. So we're willing to risk interrupting a transformation process that we consider sacred under those three categories. The earth is saying through our voice, we're suicidal. We're suicidal. The earth is saying this planet is changing in such a way that people are going to die, but yet we're still on the same path. The earth is the text in earth-centered theology. I can remember when I was, I think I was 17 years old, and I was in a fundamentalist Baptist church where I initially engaged any religion, and in a Baptist church, the saying is, we are people of the book. The book. The Holy Bible is our sacred text. And I watched this minister, and how I got to the church, and his son was on the football and wrestling team, and so was I. So I had a different perspective of him as friend's father and preacher. So sometimes I'm took him serious and sometimes not, as an adolescent male who rebels against authority and father figures. But this man opened up the Bible, picked up this page, and ripped this page out of the Bible. And I want to tell you something. That had an effect. You could hear people gasp. He ripped a page out of the sacred text, wrinkled it up, threw it away, and said, since you don't pay any attention to it, so what? I've been preaching out of it for 5 years and you haven't done it. So I guess this particular page has no meaning. You throw it away. The church behaved better after that. It's good. The American flag symbolizes something. The American flag, in my view, not only symbolizes a way of life, which, however you will, under jeopardy or not jeopardy these days, the American flag symbolizes boundaries around Earth, symbolizes a nation state. It symbolizes that. It is a symbol. It is a map. It is not the territory. We're thinking about passing laws that if you burn the symbol, it's going to be a felony.
But we can do whatever we want to what it symbolizes. And we just go to the car show, go to the ball game, turn the television on, play this game and do this. But if we attack the symbol, we go, oh, you can't do that. But if we attack what the symbol symbolizes, somehow we become more passive. Somehow. We become more passive. On this earth, month, day, year, forever, this earth, as far as humankind exists, if we take the viewpoint that the earth is the sacred text, that the earth itself is the text, that means your body is also the text. I've discovered something recently, speaking of bodies being the text. If I walk every day, and now my neighbor's sauna is broken down, though, so I'm struggling with that, go into a sauna every day, I don't need blood pressure medicine. If I eat salt, potato chips, don't walk, sit, watch TV a lot, I need blood pressure medicine. How many of us, as our body speaks to us, ignore our body? The sacred text. Hey, that was a confession on my part, the sacred text. Are the theologians, Gerken and Brueggemann, on to something when they say our culture produces a psychic numbing? Our culture reduces any sense of self-agency. Al Gore is looking, whatever's going on in his mind, whether you agree or disagree, he's looking at a body of information and he's saying life as we know it is going to end, end in a not pleasant way. And he's saying we're still electing people that create laws that pay no attention to the earth speaking. And what's going on with us that's happening? Taking the viewpoint of the earth being text, as is, I believe, represented in the seventh principle, and interpreting the rest of the principles from that vantage point, from that place where we stand, I think our lives would be drastically different. Not only do that, I think that if we were isolated and by ourselves, having the values that we have, and we did not come out and gather as a community, how could we not move to depression and anxiety and isolate ourselves? I think we, as we honor ourselves as a community and come to this place, a place where we have a voice in the community, where we are not alone, where we do have some power as a group of people, that is, if we put that seventh principle as the vantage point in which we interpret the rest of our principles and then engage this community from that, people will hear us. Because that is coming from a sacred text that we all stand on, this earth. That what we have to say is vitally important today. And we are a community that holds that value up and says this is one of our primary values. And if we do that in a way that makes sense, integrated with the rest of the principles, our voice will be heard. It is who we are. And what I'm saying today is, let's be who we are.